Frank, it's great to have you here on our campus and back in Northeast Louisiana.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Jason.
You were born in Monroe.
I was indeed, 1958.
In St. Francis?
St. Francis Hospital. And we lived here, well, on and off until I was eight. So I think we moved away in 1966 to the New Orleans area. Never came back except to see my grandparents and my relatives. And on very rare occasions, family reunions and so forth. So for the most part, I've been away from here since 1966.
And how did living in and around Louisiana and Arkansas later on influence your musical compositions?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, when we were eight, we moved down to the New Orleans area, and there was a huge influence down there because of that whole gumbo of musical influences, the early jazz influence, the Cajun Creole music as well, all of that sort of melting pot of cultural influences and musical influences sort of got planted in my system and just became a part of who I am at a very early age. I was very fortunate. My father exposed me to all of this really wonderful music at a very young age. So I feel like I owe a lot to my native state of Louisiana. And there's a huge nostalgia I have. Even though I left it at such an early age, I have a huge nostalgia for this state and the rich cultural heritage.
Yes. And part of that culture of Cajun and New Orleans type music is jazz. And I don't want to say a lot of your music is influenced by jazz, but it's certainly rhythmic in the sense that jazz is rhythmic.
Yeah, and you could say it is influenced by jazz. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
And there's nothing – I'm not unique in that way. That's our music. That's American music. That's our native music. Mm-hmm. And its roots are right there in that city of New Orleans.
Yeah. How did you get into composing? You were a trumpet player in high school band in Texas. How did you say, I want to be a composer?
Well, actually, I began trumpet here in Louisiana.
Okay.
In the fourth grade down in La Place. My first teacher was a man named Chimay, Louis Chimay. He was a double bassist in the Baton Rouge Symphony. I think he also played with the New Orleans Symphony sometimes. And he was my first teacher. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I started out as a trumpet player. In fact, my father took me to a pawn shop right on Bourbon Street. I remember in the window there was a clarinet. And there was a trumpet. That was all it was. The only two instruments in the window, and they both looked great, but that clarinet looked really good to me. And I loved Pete Fountain. I mean, my dad used to take me to hear Pete Fountain.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, Dad, I want to play the clarinet. But the clarinet was $80, and the trumpet was $45. And my dad said, sorry, son, you're going to play the trumpet. And that's the end of that. So I became a trumpet player.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, I think it was probably when I was in high school in Texas, I just had no idea that kids my age could sound that good and play music like that. It was sort of a shock to me when I got to high school. I was at a very good program there in Texas, and the music was so good, and I thought, I want to be able to do this. I want to be able to write music like this. This is incredible to me. Also, there was a teacher. His name was Jerry Brumbaugh. He was just very sensitive and a very good teacher, and he saw that my ears were a little bit unique. He saw that I had the ears of a composer because, I didn't know that it was that special at the time. I thought everybody could. I was lifting things off records, you know, just taking them, dictating them on the page just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought anybody could do that. If you're a musician, you can do it. And he says, no, actually not many people can do what you're doing. This is unique. You might want to think about being a composer. So it was a teacher who first started pointing me in that direction. The combination of that teacher and that great music that we played. And there was really no looking back. From about my junior year on in high school, I knew I wanted to be a composer. There's never been a crisis in my life questioning of whether I want to go that direction or not. It was just something I knew I wanted to do. And to this day, I feel fortunate that that's what I'm doing.
Yeah. You're primarily known as a wind band composer, but you have other compositions for choral ensembles and orchestral and chamber groups, some of which we're hearing here at ULM. Why are you drawn to the wind band? What makes that ensemble unique?
Well, I think it's partly I grew up with it. I grew up playing in public school bands and orchestras, so that's very much a part of who I am. But another thing unique about the wind band is it's the huge range of color possibilities, unlike any other ensemble. It almost has too much color, and that's why so many, especially younger, less experienced composers, can really overdo it and just literally obscure what they're trying to express by overdoing it with the color, because if you get too carried away with the colors in the band, they all blend together and you end up with a gray sound, not all that rich, beautiful color. It all meshes together to make that really ugly gray sound. So one has to be careful with it. But I just love that. I celebrate the rich color spectrum in the wind band. It's something that I've always been drawn to. But I would never want to just write for any one medium. I like to wear different hats. That's what I love to do as a composer. It keeps it interesting to me. So, in fact, right now I'm writing a big choral symphony for chorus and orchestra for the Pacific Chorale and the Pacific Symphony in California. And then the piece after that is a piece for someone in Korea. Then I have a saxophone concerto. So I love to keep changing. I would never want to write any one kind of music, whether it's wind band or orchestra or choir. I like to keep switching around. Mm-hmm. Keeps it interesting for me.
Do you have that one composition right now that you're like really proud of, like your one prize jewel composition that you're like, yeah, I wrote that piece and that's mine?
There are a few that I'm really particularly proud of. They're a little bit like children, so it's difficult to just pick one. You know, I love them all. Some of them have great lives. Some of them wind up in prison. I still love them all. I guess in the wind band world right now, Angels in the Architecture, I'm really thrilled with it right now. I just feel like one of the good things about being a composer is we keep getting better. And I feel like I'm getting closer and closer to achieving my initial aims. I'm able to express what I'm trying to express with greater success as I get older. That's one advantage. It's one of the few good things about getting older, I think, is that. So that's one in particular. Another is my clarinet concerto. I have a concerto for clarinet and orchestra, and there's also a version of it for wind ensemble. Mm-hmm. And I really love that one as well. Mm-hmm. Blue Shades is fun to conduct.
Yep.
I could just keep going here. So there's just too many of them.
I'm speaking with composer and conductor Frank Tekeli on his very first musical return home to the Twin Cities, and it is my pleasure in talking with him. And we continue our conversation about his conducting career. You have become very good friends with some of the giants in the wind band conducting world, Jerry Junkin, Richard Floyd, Alan McMurray, just to name a few. But you also yourself go out and conduct and guest conduct. What is it like as a guest conductor, you know, normally you would be conducting somebody else's music, but normally you go out and you conduct your own music. What is it conducting, you know, young people or even professionals in your music with you on the podium? What is that experience like for you?
Again, it comes back to what I said earlier about wearing different hats. It's just yet another hat I get to wear. I love conducting. I love the balance it provides. It sort of complements my creative work. Composing, when you're composing, you're sitting alone. I'm alone at my desk in my backyard studio, separate from my house, for hours. And if you put a video camera on me, it wouldn't be very compelling for someone to watch, sitting there for about 6 hours just thinking, every now and then writing something, maybe going to the computer, typing it in, and then thinking that gets pretty dull. Whereas conducting is real time. It's the energy you're putting out is given right back to you. So it's that kind of circular energy. I know the audience can't see me doing this. I'm drawing circles with my hands here. I'm putting energy out, and then give me energy back, which feeds me to give them more energy. And it's that constant sense of community between me and the players in a real-time situation that excites me very much. And it reminds me why I'm doing what it reminds me why I'm composing. When I get out there and work with the people for whom I'm writing music, it reminds me why I'm writing that music for them. I get to see their struggles, their triumphs, their joys, their inhibitions, all of that. Just see what human beings have to go through to make music and to be a part of that and share that with them. It always informs my own. When I go back to my little studio, I go back with new ears and new perspectives, always.
Did the first time you had to conduct, was it out of necessity or it was at an invitation? Because I know, you know, some composers, they have to conduct their music or else it wouldn't get performed. But was it an invitation to come conduct, or was it like, oh my gosh, I need to conduct this?
No, it was an invitation. And, you know, I started writing after I finished, you know, I got my doctorate at University of Michigan, and I didn't really start writing for young people till I finished my degree. So I started pretty late writing for young people, and I got an invitation. Somebody, some high school band in Ohio invited me to come conduct. I thought, sure. And when I got there, I found, wow, I like this. This is enjoyable. And it made me want to write more for young people. When I started out, I didn't even think I was going to compose any music for young people. It wasn't until I got out there and realized this is something I love to do. And I'm just as proud of that music for young people as I am the music I have for professionals. It's just, again, it's two different sides of what I do, what I love to do. So I sort of fell into conducting through the back door, and I've just never stopped. The invitations have increased over the years to where now it's just part of my life, a very much an important part of my life. I'm out guest conducting, especially in the spring, constantly, and I love doing it.
Mm-hmm. I'm here in the studio with guest composer and conductor Frank Tekeli, who is on the faculty at the University of Southern California as the professor of composition. And this is your first time back to Northeast Louisiana for anything musical.
This is the first time I've ever conducted in Monroe, Louisiana.
And we're so glad you could come back and be a part of our residency here and share your music with us and the audiences and our students.
My pleasure.
It was great having you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Jason.